Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am Kate Romero, your host of Spiritual Hollywood. And as usual, I can't say another word without saying thank you to BBS Radio, Don Newsom, Douglas Newsom, and Seth Hendrick for providing us with this wonderful platform to raise consciousness using Hollywood and positive media. BBS Radio Network is one of the only places in the world where you can find so much transformation just in one place. And it's growing leaps and bounds all the time. Speaking of growing leaps and bounds, I have a pretty amazing guest this evening. It's Don Johnson, and I'm not talking about the one from Miami Vice. I'm talking about Don Johnson, the self-esteem queen. That's DawnJohnson. And her website is www.selfesteemqueen.com. That's selfesteemqueen.com. Now, that might sound like an interesting way to present oneself, and if anyone's ever earned that title, Don Johnson has. I will give you a bit of her background in a bio, and you don't want to go anywhere. You want to stay right where you're at, and you want to keep listening, because what you're going to hear on this interview can change your life very easily. Dawn, the self-esteem queen, is internationally recognized as a motivational speaker, author, business coach, and small business consultant. She's a serial entrepreneur and spoken word artist, founder of the SEQHOPE movement. Dawn uses her trials to mentor, minister, and coach people all over the world. One of today's leading experts on 10, that's actually team mentoring, self-esteem, enhancement, personal and professional leadership, and entrepreneur development, Dawn's mission in life is to teach individuals how to be better human beings. Amen. Her goal is to raise awareness and eradicate the exploitations of teenagers all over the globe. Her current projects include SEQ Collection Clothing, HOPE Platinum Coaching, and sessions with the SEQ Stop Teenage Prostitution, What Does Cancer Look Like, Consumer Vigilantes, and the highly anticipated HOPE Mindset Program. Again, that's selfesteemqueen.com. That's www.selfesteemqueen.com. Without further ado, I would like to bring on for you Dawn Johnson, the self-esteem queen. I'm so excited to have you on, Dawn. Hello.
Thank you so much. Hi. Happy Tuesday, Kate.
Happy Tuesday to you. It's like my tongue got wrapped around my eye teeth and I couldn't see what I was saying there. Think about it. With regard to your journey, Dawn, I believe after introducing you the way I just did with who you are today, that our listeners will be very surprised to find out where you come from and about what your beginnings were like and what happened when you were 14. So whatever you would like to share with our listeners about that to give them some backstory to begin our conversation, that would be great.
Thank you so much, Kate. Well, I grew up in the dot-com industry, which means that I came from the Bay Area. My family was upper middle class, and after a divorce, my mother got into a string of bad relationships, one of which that resulted in me being abandoned at an airport in California at the age of 14. So without family to contact and without any money, I ended up on the streets of L.A. I put myself through high school and put myself through college, and I supported myself by selling my body. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of years, and I dealt with playing the victim, pretending like everything that I dealt with was everyone's fault but my own. I had totally developed a victim mentality. I was depressed. I had suicidal thoughts. I had been trying to commit suicide. And then one day I made a decision that it was up to me to be a better human being. I couldn't blame other people for what I had been through. And I started a process of forgiveness because of a series of things that happened in my life during the time of me being on the streets. And with that series of forgiveness, I forgave everybody that I had blamed for my problems, one of which being my mother who abandoned me. And that started kind of who the self-esteem queen is, because every day I had to tell myself who I was, and I had to pretty much be my best cheerleader. And so that spawned off into me, you know, becoming the self-esteem queen. Some people in my industry as a motivational speaker, they have a moniker, but I think that the self-esteem queen is really who I am as a person, because deep within my soul, that is who I am, and that's what I try to project off to other people.
Right. So, you know, this is an amazing story, and I want you to just feel free to say just how it was for our listeners, because if it's not mainstream, it's on BBS radio. You can speak extremely freely here about the kinds of addictions that you encounter to survive. I heard you say that, you know, you contemplated suicide a great deal, and I have a feeling that's because you may have felt incredibly alone, and that it was just too overwhelming to even live, because, you know, as a 14-year-old, you were expected to be an adult, a grown-up, to make adult decisions when you didn't have the life experience to support that. So with regard to your survival on the streets and your work now for teenagers to end teenage prostitution as best you can, what was it that you had to go through that you want to see the teenagers today avoid?
I went through so much, Kate. You name it, I've been through it. I went through the addiction to man-made medications. At that time, for me, it was caffeine pills. I had been diagnosed with a number of different disorders, all of which I felt, even at the age of 14, 15, I felt that these diagnoses were wrong simply because no one had even taken the time out to ask me what I had been through in my life. And certainly you can't really diagnose somebody within a 45-minute conversation. You need 6 hours to talk to me in order to tell me what's wrong with me. So I spent a lot of time distrustful of a lot of different people, doctors included, police officers. I've been gang raped by police officers here in California. I've been held against my will. I've been cut. I've been stabbed. I've been brutalized. I have dealt with verbal abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse. I have been homeless. I've lived under a freeway overpass here in Los Angeles. I have spent a little time on Skid Row, which for people that are not in Los Angeles is an area that used to be heavily populated and still is sort of populated by our homeless community here in Los Angeles. And I spent time cutting myself. I used to be a cutter. And for those of you who don't know what a cutter is someone who has so much built-up tension and emotion inside that the only way that they can really release that without really hurting somebody else is to hurt themselves.
So
I spent a lot of time depressed. I was placed on antidepressants, and before the disclaimers came out that, you know, it could kill you and have the reversed effect, I was one of the hundreds of thousands of Americans who had the adverse reaction to an antidepressant and was attempting suicide while on them. I've been mentally examined and institutionalized against my will because I'm outspoken and don't believe that I should be diagnosed with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all before the age of 21 years old.
Right. I can imagine how that could affect a teenager. And, you know, Dawn, I believe, for me personally, that we all choose our parents and we all choose our path. And I believe that before you were born, you chose to be a voice for teenagers who are feeling hopeless. Because as a teenager, it's a very hard time because you're trying to find your identity. And you know, to have been abandoned at an airport when you were 14 years old in California and having to start selling your body, it most likely flipped a switch of sexual activity that perhaps may have caused a little sex addiction in your life. Is that true?
Thank you very much for bringing that up, sexual addiction, which is why I'm single and celibate now. Yeah, that was another addiction, which really spawned from me being molested as a child. And that is really what led me to be so comfortable at a very young age taking up the trade that I ended up taking up, because of being abused at such a young age and for such a long time by a family member.
Right, right.
Who's still very much alive.
That family member's still very much alive?
Very much alive and still living in California.
And have you had contact with that person?
I just saw this person, I'd say, 3 weeks ago.
Uh-huh. And how was that?
I mean, I have a very forgiving heart, and there's enough dysfunction in the world. I don't think that a part of that dysfunction should be me not forgiving someone for something that they either knew or didn't know was wrong when they did it. I don't expect to get the truth. I only expect to seek forgiveness for myself and for others. And so I'm not concerned. It actually was my mother's brother.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for years, he never said anything. I confronted the situation years ago, and he admitted to it. But his wife still doesn't want to admit that it happened.
Right.
And that's understandable. That's not that he has two boys, so that's understandable. But definitely, does it bring a divide in the family? Yes, because when I come around, I'm happy and cheerful. I'm the self-esteem queen, and certainly he has a lot of built-up emotions that result in him feeling guilty. So it's uncomfortable for him, but it's not uncomfortable for me because I've moved on.
That's wonderful. And in that moving on, my guess is that forgiving yourself was the greatest gift you could give the world.
Yeah. You know, Kate, because here's the reality. I come into the universe. I'm this ball of fire. You know, I was speaking by 9 months old, complete sentences. And my parents knew that there was something within me that was going to be special. Now, definitely some people see their trials and tribulations as the most horrible, horrific things. Oh, I don't want to remember. They made me who I am, Kate. And
mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about every single thing that happened to me in my past, because that is what made me who I am today.
Right, right. And I agree with you. I've had a pretty tumultuous childhood myself, and I found that in the way I was raised that I heard a lot of lies about myself, and it was the belief of those lies that caused me all my suffering. And it wasn't until I got distance from the people who said those things that I could discover the truth of myself and reunite with my authenticity. And when I did that, you know, it's an everyday, all day long process of forgiving yourself.
That's right.
For something you believe about yourself that isn't true. And you did the best you could with what you had to work with when you were 14. And, you know, you were an entrepreneur then, because, you know, if somebody's going to take your body without your permission as a child, then at least you can get money for that later. And that was something you felt comfortable with, so you became an entrepreneur in that way.
Correct.
And, you know, many teenagers and runaways, you know, choose that path, and they end up, you know, addicted to heroin or you know, other things like that, and a lot of them don't make it. So who are you speaking today to? What kinds of groups are you speaking today to that would help turn that around and would help runaways want to find some other path to go on?
Well, your audience is going to be shocked at the number of or the diaspora of people that I speak to. Not only do I speak to kids that have been molested, kids that are on the streets, kids that have been victimized by others, I also speak to adults who have molested children or who want to molest children.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is that if they went to a real therapist, by law, that therapist would have to report them.
Right.
When they come to me, just a certified life coach who has experience with forgiving a molester within my own family,
mm-hmm.
They feel a lot more comfortable speaking to me about why they feel the way they feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important for me to talk to them, too, because I know that we would love to hate the molester. I know that we would love to hate everything that the molester represents, but they're humans. And I teach people how to be better human beings. Mm-hmm. So I spend time talking to college students. There's a lot of college students who have shielded the fact that they've been molested, and that goes off into them now becoming adults, being away from their homes, and then acting rebellious because they haven't really confronted the issue that they've been molested. They become promiscuous in college. They become promiscuous in high school. These days now, middle school, I talk to kids from elementary all the way up to post-secondary. I talk to adults. I talk to people in prison. You name it, I talk to them. And I don't just do it here, Kate. I travel the world. Last month, it was Israel. And last year, it was Egypt and Greece. I travel the world, and I talk about this because prostitution doesn't stop in California or the United States, and neither does the exploitation of teens everywhere.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm sitting here getting excited about another group of people you could talk to and impact and make a difference for, and that's law enforcement.
Yeah. You know, I think that I've never really thought about that. But I think that would be a great idea.
You were gang raped by police officers, right?
This is correct.
Well, I think I did. That makes you a great candidate to go and talk to them about what happened and your experiences and how things can be better.
And I know that with a lot of the kids that I rescue here in Southern California, I would say that maybe 40% of them, which is really 40% too many, have told me that they've been exploited by police officers.
Mm-hmm.
40% is a lot.
Yes, and when I was a child growing up and went to police officers and the principal of my school and my teachers and any adult who I thought could help me, nobody listened to me, and the police officers always took me back to my abusers and didn't do anything to help me. So, you know, and that was a different time, too, when I was a child, and it was a very painful thing to happen because I had nobody to help me, period. And so, you know, when a person feels incredibly alone, they do contemplate suicide because they start wondering, they start doubting their purpose. They start doubting why they're here, and they're just children and young people who don't have life experience to sort this out or the sophistication to know all the answers or the role models to guide them.
Exactly.
So you found your own role models, and you found a way to make a living. And as an entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur, you, as I said, did begin when you were 14. But before that, you had a pretty normal childhood?
Very normal childhood. Loved my childhood. My mother was an entrepreneur. She still is an entrepreneur. My stepfather, entrepreneur, still an entrepreneur. So I grew up in that household. My mother was home for me. My teachers used to bring me home for lunch.
Wow.
So my mother was the mother that everybody wanted when I was a kid.
Isn't that amazing?
I never had to spend the night at anyone's house because people always wanted to be at my house.
Yeah. That's amazing. What a difference from coming from that to being abandoned in the airport. That's just amazing. And I think we might have a caller. Is there a caller on the line?
Yes, there is.
Okay. Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking to Dawn, the self-esteem queen's mother.
Hi, Mom. Oh.
How are you?
Hello. Nice to meet you. What's your name?
My name is Sandra.
Hi, Sandra. So,
and
did you have a question for your daughter or a comment?
Well, let me give you some comments. For your listeners and for everyone, that they really need to know is that when you start putting men in front of your children, it's the worst thing you could actually do.
Yes.
And I've lived with a lot of guilt. I've lived with a lot of problems with doing that. And Dawn and I are now in a extremely healthy relationship. We are best friends, and we are writing a book.
And what is the name of that book?
The name of the book is going to be Continue the Journey, which basically gives the synopsis of Dawn forgiving me, what I felt, what she felt at the particular time that this all these horrific things happened to her, and how we have actually bridged that gap, and that there is hope for everyone that you can forgive, you can move on, and you can make some kind of communication changes so you can have a relationship with your children.
That's a beautiful thing to say. And, you know, it's you know, this whole story is just very telling about how things can be transformed in the twinkle of an eye, and forgiveness really is a huge part of that. And also, Sandra, for you to forgive yourself would be the best gift you could give to Dawn.
And that's what I have worked on, and that's what I have done, is I have forgiven myself for the things that I've done, and
right.
She, as a gracious person that she is, has forgiven me. And now
Beautiful.
She's back in my life. It's wonderful.
That's great. And have you, if you don't mind my asking, have you spoken to your brother about his part in Dawn's life?
My brother and I, when it came out, Dawn was an adult, and so I never knew anything happened. And when it actually came to be a confrontation and he finally admitted it,
right.
He doesn't talk about it. We really do not have a relationship. It's pretty estranged. And when I go over, you know, to visit family, he and his wife jump up and leave.
Right.
And that's his guilt and that's his problem.
Right, exactly. Wow.
And so what we do is we don't change anything the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
If they choose to leave, then that's their business.
Right, right. Well, that's a beautiful example for people and a great way to be. And the fact that you, Dawn, are single and celibate right now is, for me, what I hear in that is that you're reclaiming your childhood innocence.
Yeah, that's exactly what you hear. And, Mom, I love you. Thank you so much for, calling in.
Thank you, Sandra.
You're very welcome.
What I think people should know, Kate, is that there are a lot of people who have a story similar to mine, and they're too ashamed and too embarrassed to come out and tell their story.
Right.
And then you have someone like me. I remember when I was in middle school, I was made to read a book called Go Ask Alice. I actually still have that book. And it was a diary that we later found out was fictitious. There was no Alice and so on and so forth. But the book pretty much was a diary of a girl who got strung out on drugs and then she overdosed at the age of like 14 or 15. I am the Go Ask Alice that didn't die. And I remember when Yolanda King, who passed away a couple of years ago, but she was my mentor for 8 years, and Yolanda King told me that this book really should be in the hands of every junior high student across the United States. And I know that there are some things in the book that are a little rough around the edges, but the reality is that kids at 11 and 12 are getting pregnant. And that is a travesty here in America and beyond. And I think that if we don't take responsibility for our children, we're going to regret it when we're old and we need someone to take care of us and we haven't taught the people who need to learn now empathy. Because a lot of kids don't have empathy. That's why you see kids robbing and killing and just being disrespectful around adults. I never cursed around adults. And now I'm 30 years old and I hear adults not saying anything to these kids is a curse. And, you know, I mean, I'm taken aback, and I know I've been through a lot, but I also have grown a lot as a human, and I just don't understand why more people are not standing up and giving more attention to the fact that our youth are not only ignorant in book knowledge, but they're ignorant in street knowledge, too.
Yes, and there's also a childhood obesity epidemic.
Yes.
So you know, it's like we're breeding our future, and our future is not being looked over like it could be. And for one thing, as a stepmom, I'm extremely conscious as much as I can be about being a role model and modeling health and fitness, as well as emotional health and fitness and spiritual health and fitness. You know, and our children are very conscious of being part of the greater good. And, you know, they themselves are role models. And that's the kind of children that we are consciously, you know, raising to the best of our ability. And, you know, their own mother, I believe, has the same goal for them, to be people who contribute to the world. And I know that from my own childhood that parents don't know they don't have guidance. They didn't have good role models. My parents, my mother in particular, did not have good role models. She comes from a family of nine, and had no clue how to raise her seven children. And had she known the kinds of things that would hurt a child's psyche, I'm certain she would have done it a different way. But she just didn't know. There wasn't help back then. And there are a lot of resources now for parents to become the kind of role model that will create an emotionally balanced child and a future adult. So what would you offer to our listeners, Dawn, for where someone right now listening who's struggling with a child could get resources for help? Some positive advocates.
I would definitely, let me say this, Kate. Let me say that although I believe that there are numerous resources out there for not only parents but teens to get, I think that a lot of the nonprofit organizations don't spend enough time analyzing the people that come in to get help. And what happens is that they get this layer of help that, if not given habitually, it does nothing for them. If people need someone to talk to, they need help, they need something immediate, I would tell people to log on to selfesteemqueen.com and shoot me an email. Reason being, one of the things that you mentioned when you first introduced me and you talked about my bio, we talked about what you call the HOPE movement, and HOPE for me stands for Hold On, Possibilities Exist.
Yes.
And Hold On, Possibilities Exist is for every single person in America and beyond. I have been through so many things in my life, but when I was a kid and I would go through struggles, my mom used to tell me, Dawn, hold on, possibilities exist. When I was in the streets selling my body for money, I used to tell myself, hold on, possibilities exist.
Mm-hmm.
I used to always analyze every situation that I was in, and no matter what the situation was, whether it be gang rape, whether it be me being held against my will, whether it be me being robbed, me being beat up, possibilities always existed. And so I've turned that into a four-quadrant program, and the four quadrants are seek it, speak it, assess it, confess it. And I've called that, or I've coined it, the HOPE mindset, because it's for everybody. It's for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I tailor that message and that four-quadrant program to parents. I tailor it to teens. I tailor it to business professionals. I tailor it to college students. I tailor it to high school students on their way to college. I've tailored the message for so many different people that if people contact me, if they're local, I'm more than happy to pass on my professional references for counselors that are licensed, for psychotherapists that I know personally, that I know will be able to give good assessments of people.
Mm-hmm.
I have that.
Great. So do you work with child advocates as well?
Yeah. I some people call me the Harriet Tubman of prostitution, of teen prostitution. I work with a little bit of everybody from here to Oregon to Canada to Alaska. I don't really do mainstream. I'm pretty much like an underground person. I literally get in my car, I take an armed bodyguard, and I rescue prostitutes, meaning from their pimps. If they're at a hotel or a motel, if they call me on my toll-free number and they need me, I come. So there are a lot of people in the mainstream that think that that sort of consumer vigilante, if you will, is not healthy. But for me, I think I've rescued more teenage prostitutes than Covenant House and Children of the Night, both of which I spend a lot of time helping, and also both of which I spend a lot of time speaking on behalf of. But I just think sometimes if you can go the extra mile, you should. And since I can, I do.
Wonderful. And I sense a reality show out of that, you know. Take an armed guard with you and go rescue teenage prostitutes from their pimps would make, you know, for some exciting television.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I would hope that people realize that that's about as real as reality TV gets. I mean, I understand that there are a lot of things that are coined reality TV, but that's the same as saying something doesn't have trans fat. If you're eating it and it tastes good, it probably has a little bit of trans fat. So the difference between non-reality and my reality is that I went through a lot of things that some would coin horrific, but I took those things and I flipped it and made them all positive for my life. So I've learned a lesson from every single thing I've been through, from domestic violence to depression to suicide attempts. I've learned from every single thing that I've been through.
Right, right. That's very clear. So, you know, there's the show Intervention for A&E, and that's a different kind of reality show that's very real, and it's saving families and lives all over the planet, and they just won an Emmy the Saturday before last.
Yeah, I actually watched that show on the Internet. I love
that
show.
Who looks like Dr. Phil, Jeff Van Vonderen.
Yeah.
So you know, that show has done amazing good, and I know that not every reality show is geared towards that. Like, some of them are just geared towards how much money can you spend and can we watch you spend it, and those don't interest me at all. But the ones that are for a greater good do interest me quite a bit. And we're also working on something right now called Peaceful Shared Custody, where because divorce is also epidemic in the United States, and it's something that, you know, really affects children, you know, as divorce affected you, Dawn.
Correct.
Had you had resources and your mother had resources called Peaceful Shared Custody or something like that, then, you know, she may have gotten help about the relationships that she was getting in, and might have gotten some guidance to help her love herself enough to say no to certain people and attract the good-hearted people that she deserved.
I totally agree. And one of the reasons why I don't watch TV is because there aren't enough shows that really show, here's the problem, here's the cause, and here's the solution.
Right.
You know, and when you don't give kids the consequences of dating 12 women at one time and then them all competing against each other to be with you, only for you to not be with that person, ruin their self-esteem so that you can have a season two of your quote-unquote reality show. When we don't tell kids that that's not reality, then what happens is that they then reenact that into their lives because they're impressionable.
Of course. They certainly are. And I have on the signature of my email says, the degree to which people have evolved is instantly revealed through what they call entertainment and fun. Nourishment for the mind is no different from nourishment for the body. What you put in is what you get back in triplicate. And that's a quote from Neil Donald Walsh. And that's my belief. And that goes out on every email I send out as a little message.
Yes.
Or I'm sure some people don't like it when they read it because of what they're finding to be entertainment and fun, and that's the whole point.
I agree.
Every little thing we do makes a difference.
I agree. I totally agree.
You know, every little pearl of wisdom and every little thought-provoking comment, by sticking to what's in your heart and what your value system is and not selling out, really is what matters. And it seems like you started out in life, well, as a teenager, doing everything you could the hard way so that you could have it easier in your adult life and become a messenger of alchemy, actually, taking something horrific and turning it into something beautiful.
Right.
And, you know, I really would encourage you to look into speaking to law enforcement because of what happened to you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to look into that.
Because I really think that would be valuable, another place. And it would also be very healing for you, I'm guessing.
I think it would, because although I don't have any sort of dislike or hate against police officers, I would say that they're not the very first person I call if something is wrong.
And I would like a day where you feel like you could call them.
Right, and I know a lot of it has to do with the things that I've dealt with as a child.
Right, of course. So, you know, it's like freedom truly is worth the cost of it. I mean, you know, to feel like you would call somebody else before you would call law enforcement is not really freedom, because they're there for you. And I know that what you experienced was beyond horrific and very traumatic and terrorizing, and left an imprint on you. And I would like to see a day where you have the freedom to not choose someone else to call if you're in danger, and to just utilize that resource and to heal that wound. is what I would like to see for you. And that's what I'm speaking about by talking to law enforcement about your story.
Well, thank you very much. I definitely am going to look into that. I had never even thought about it until we actually talked about it, but I think that that would be healing not only for myself, but for some of them who perhaps have one sort of thought on why kids are on the streets. I would love to be the one to tell them. I know in my book I talk about the fact your next doctor, your next lawyer is right here on the streets, and you're too busy passing us by, making a prejudgment about us without even knowing what we've been through and what has led us here. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes they had the opportunity to just know what goes on in the mind of a teen who's on the streets, then that may be helpful for them too.
Well, also, Dawn, it would be helpful for those who have watched or witnessed gang rape by other police officers, because it happens. It happened to you.
Yes.
Who haven't spoken up or may be carrying that guilt and shame around with them. And if they hear you speak about how that was for you, then they may come forward and get help, or, you know, or find some kind of transformation in hearing your story and just how you suffered from that. And I can tell you're a very strong person, and you wouldn't maybe want to admit that you suffered a great deal from that. And I can't see how you didn't suffer a great deal from that.
Well, I know mentally I've suffered a great deal from a lot of the different things that I've dealt with. And I know if given the opportunity to talk about it again, a lot of things would come up that perhaps are not coming up now, just because it's not replaying in my mind constantly.
Good.
But I definitely know that there are some areas where I can be healed because of what happened to me.
Right, right. And life is such a process. It's a beautiful process. And, you know, we're never given more than we can handle, and things won't come up until we're ready to handle it. So, you know, they're percolating constantly, and you've found enough healing, apparently, to not have that movie running in your head constantly, so that you can feel present and you can experience joy and you can experience forgiveness for yourself and others and wish well those who have hurt you. So, you know, you've come such a very long way. And, you know, to speak to others and inspire them by what you've been through is really the best therapy of all, and not just for yourself but for others too. So having you on my show is really a privilege, because, you know, I intend to use the show the best way I can to touch as many people that I can who I feel are in collective consciousness calling out for the kind of guests that I have on at any given time. And there was definitely a call out for someone like yourself. So thank you for being available and so transparent and forthright and forthcoming with the details of your past. And I know you've got three books, a trilogy, that are in the works, and you have one that's finished called Dear Diary, is it A Letter to My Sister?
Correct.
Yes. And what do you mean by A Letter to My Sister?
So I have two siblings, one younger and one older. I have an older sister by 2 years. And my sister had actually ran away from the home 2 years prior to me being abandoned. And so I didn't know where my sister was, but I knew that she actually was on the streets in L.A. So initially when I went to L.A., I went looking for my sister naively at that age, thinking that I could just find her. And what ended up happening was, not only did I not find my sister, but I found myself writing her letter after letter after letter, and that pretty much is how I dealt with the pain. I had so many letters that I had written to my sister that by the time we found each other and we kind of exchanged stories, we found out that we were not very far from each other in L.A., and that my sister was going under an assumed name, and that's why I hadn't been able to find her.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept all of these diary entries, and so I said, you know what, the best way that I can tell a teenager why I do what I do, when I began to rescue teen prostitutes, I said the best way for me to be able to tell them is to compile my story into a book and give it to them. And that was my validation for years. Before I actually had it traditionally printed, I had this book ran off over 4,000 times, and I gave it out to all of the kids that I rescued because I wanted them to know I'm not just doing this because, you know, not just another person with a nonprofit. It's not that, you know, this is my cause. This is my cause because I lived it, and I have to be the voice for the children of the night, because sometimes nobody can hear them crying.
Right, right. And I happen to know that I would like to, let me see if I can find that. I'm looking now for a passage that you said. You said, would you like to know my secret to being truly happy? In the midst of what I had deemed my most horrible tribulation, I opened my eyes, hoping to see my circumstances clearer, but the tears blurred my vision. Completely helpless, I did the only thing left in my power. I forgave.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I always look at that quote. It's my quote, but I always look at that quote because sometimes I believe that the universe will have you to speak to yourself sometimes. And when I wrote that quote, I was dealing with whatever the issue is that I was dealing with at that time. I think it was a bad breakup. But when I read that, that applies to every single thing that I've been through in my life. That includes bad drivers. That includes bad police officers. That includes bad family members. That includes bad teachers. That includes bad friends. That includes bad boyfriends. That includes me. You know, sometimes you can be your own most horrible tribulation because the self-doubt and the self-hatred that we sometimes spew upon each other is a horrible, horrible thing. But it's even worse when we spew it upon ourselves. And I already know I can be my worst enemy, and I know that there are millions of other Americans who demoralize themselves like I've done to myself many times.
Right, and I know we all go through that, and for me, that part of myself that has a tendency to do that, I've named it the loony bin. And when the loony bin starts speaking, I just go, oh, that's the loony bin, and I let it speak, and I listen, and I don't take it in now, but I did it one time, and before I named it the loony bin, I believed all that inner critic stuff. But now that I've named it the loony bin, and when I hear myself, you know, being harsh with me, I just go, oh, that's the loony bin, and I just let it be there. Because if I can't forgive the loony bin, it's going to kick my butt. So, you know, we all have that part of ourselves called the loony bin, and it might be 1%, might be 99% wonderful person, but that 1%, the loony bin, it's a part of us. We have some dark side to us, and if we don't embrace that, accept it, and forgive it, then it will take over. Have you noticed that?
I agree.
So, you know, that's a wonderful topic to touch on, so thank you for sharing your part of that. So tell us the titles of the three books if you're able to. Are you able to say?
So the very first book is Dear Diary, A Letter to My Sister, which is my diary about my life as a teen prostitute. The second book is co-authored with my mother, and that book is called Continue the Journey, Bridging the Communication Gap Between Parents and Their Teens.
Mm-hmm.
And the third book is entitled Dysfunction is a Word in the Dictionary, Not a Way to Live Your Life. And that book pretty much is going to touch on every single thing that I've been through, from suicide addiction to now this year being a cancer survivor at 30 years old, to me dealing with the sexual addiction, the caffeine pills, and every other thing that I've dealt with, and showing how, you know, yeah, dysfunction is really just a word in the dictionary. It's not a way to live your life. This year, I left domestic violence, and it was very difficult for me to do so because the person that I had been with, I really cared a lot about. But when someone doesn't care enough about themselves to give you the respect that you deserve,
mm-hmm.
most women don't leave. This year, I left, and I left after my eye had been busted open and my body had been badly bruised. And it happened actually around the Chris Brown Rihanna situation, which made it even worse for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did in order to stand up for myself is I took pictures of what happened to me and I put it on the internet. And I blogged about it for every single woman who has been afraid to leave and for every single woman who has continued to stay. I wanted to tell my story. And the title of that blog was Dysfunction is a Word in the Dictionary, Not a Way to Live Your Life. So that's the trilogy. That's the third book. And the second book is already almost done. We're sending that off to the editor in about 2 weeks. And then the third book will be done by the end of this year. I have so much in me, seriously. And I had taken a year off because I had been diagnosed with cancer. I took a year off, and all I did was write in 2008. So now 2009, I feel a lot better. And I feel like the world needs to know exactly who the self-esteem queen is. And it's not for ego reasons. It's because I think that God's been looking for a few soldiers. He really has. People that are unafraid to tell their story in its entirety. You understand? Not because I have an album out, not because I have a TV show out, but because my story needs to be told because there are too many hurting people in the world.
Yes. Amen to that. Amen to that. And everybody has the right to live a life without self-destructive behaviors. Everyone has the right not to be addicted to alcohol, drugs, caffeine pills, sex, or anything else, or food. Everyone has the right to love themselves enough not to destroy themselves. And it is a right that we didn't know we had, but we all have the right to live a dysfunction-free life.
That's right.
And, you know, what a wonderful role model you are for that. And also for you to be a 14-year-old on your own like you were, you know, you've developed some street smarts that are worthy of being in a book all by itself, just called Street Smarts, because you don't go through what you went through without learning that. And you can apply it in corporations. You can apply it in everyday life. You can apply it in business. You can apply it in your speaking. You can apply it everywhere. Because once you have street smarts, you can fit in anywhere you go and speak the language of whomever is listening. And that's what's very important for a speaker. So your street smarts have a lot of value.
Well, thank you very much. And I think that's one of the reasons why me coming out with my story is so important, because you see a lot of people in the media who claim to have been people of the night, women of the night, if you will, and they write books about it and they make lots of money and they talk about the celebrities that they've slept with, but they don't really touch on the fact that your self-esteem, once horrifically shot, sometimes cannot be recovered. And that's why you have so many lifeless bodies walking around. So I'd like to be the person to really tell the story the way that it needs to be told, not because I need people to look at me and say, wow, she went through all of that. And she. No, I really want people to understand that I'm not the only one that's been through it. And perhaps if someone comes out and starts telling the truth amidst the world of habitual liars, then maybe we can start healing one by one. See, people are afraid to tell other people the truth because they're embarrassed. They're ashamed. They feel like, oh, my God, I'm the only one that's going through it. If only they knew, their best friend probably has been molested, too.
Right, right. You know, and if you don't talk about it, you're not connecting with other humans. And another thing, too, Dawn, that I see as a 14-year-old who was abandoned at the airport in California and fended for herself is that opened your heart wide open. Any child who goes through that kind of trauma and that kind of abandonment, it will either open their heart or it will kill them. And obviously, you know, even though you were, I think you could even call it obsessed with suicide at one point, you didn't actually do it. So I believe that opened your heart wide open to make you an awesome light worker in your adult years. And if you would like to share with our listeners how cancer, you even took cancer and made it a positive thing because it turned your weight around and your health and your lifestyle,
yes.
Did it not?
Yes. So I would say in the year 2003, I was a size 16. I'm only 5'1.5". And what happened is that, you know, certainly after you give up a life of selling your body for money, the last thing you want to do is to be approached by a man. So what I did was I ballooned up into a size 16, and one day I woke up and I said, I absolutely don't like the way I look, and I made a decision not to get surgery but to start exercising and treating my life a little better. So I started to eat and enjoy my food and take slower bites, and I started to, you know, go out and, you know, go up and down Laurel Canyon and find different trails to walk or jog or run. I started to do things that edified me. And then I started to lose weight. And so now I've become this person who is an advocate for people losing weight. And then in 2007, I was diagnosed with having cancer.
What kind?
And I was diagnosed with having ovarian cancer, and I was misdiagnosed twice before being diagnosed with cancer at a stage 3.
Wow.
Now imagine how one would feel when all you're doing is trying to help the world and now all of a sudden you've been diagnosed with this. And so I spent 2008 healing my body. I didn't take one man-made medication. I was institutionalized against my will at Cedars-Sinai. I think I can say that freely because they have it on record. I was institutionalized against my will because I refused to take man-made medications because I did not believe that I wanted to be healed by such. And can I tell you, my father died this year in January. And after my father died, I went to the doctor, and they couldn't find not one cancer cell in my body. Not one, Kate. Not one.
Mm.
And
wow.
they wanted to keep me there so that they could study me. Number one, I'm not a guinea pig. Number two, I'm not a mouse. And number three, I was already institutionalized against my will. The last thing I wanted to do was sit and let, the more that you don't know, the more that I understand that the universe is listening to me. And by the vibrations of what I believe in, which is the law of attraction, I believe I was healed. And then, guess what, Kate? I started to meet other people in 2008 that had healed their own cancer, young and old. And that spawned off the What Does Cancer Look Like project that I have. And What Does Cancer Look Like is really just a bird's eye view of what cancer looks like on a lot of different fronts. I spent a lot of time being denied access to boarding planes first because people didn't believe that I had an illness that required me to do such. I had to tell people, yes, I'm sick, in order to get better customer service. These things, I'm not the only one that deals with them. But again, I take cancer and I say, well, you know, some people don't want you to say the universe gave you such a thing, but I have a strong belief that every time I ask to be healed in a certain area, I am given something that is a trial or a tribulation that causes me to be humbled and educated simultaneously, and that's what cancer was for me.
Wonderful. And did you change your eating style at all when you had cancer? Did you start eating more healthful foods like raw foods or a vegetarian lifestyle to some degree, or did you just eat the same way you had been eating when you decided you didn't want to be a size 16 anymore?
Well, I had stopped eating those types of foods in 2003. But what happened is in 2007, I started to really pay attention to what I would eat. So whereas there may be a time that I would stop at In-N-Out Burger and get a burger, no, I totally, completely cut that out. You are correct. I went to the raw foods, and I started to really learn to love water a lot more. I also started to really get on my herb regimen. And so I did spend a lot of time learning about different herbs that are supposed to heal your body, and I took a lot of those. But my eating habits have always been sort of, I don't like to eat out. My eating was in excess, and so definitely I cut out the excess eating. But, I mean, I slimmed on down to a size 2, Kate, and, you know.
That's pretty amazing. Congratulations. And before we go, I want to ask you, when you were institutionalized at Cedars-Sinai, what did they do? Did they force man-made drugs into your system?
Yeah, because what happened is that they had me on I went to the emergency room. They had me on it. They put me on a 72-hour hold. I called my mother. They wouldn't allow me to speak to my mother in the emergency room. They transported me over to the mental health side and then told me that if I didn't take the medications, that 72-hour hold would turn into a 7-day. And as good as my name is Dawn, they turned that into a 7-day hold because
and
I refused to take their medication.
Forcing you to have the medication to cure the cancer?
No. The reason why I was institutionalized was for that reason, but then when I got there, they wanted me to take medication for bipolar disorder.
Oh, so you're not bipolar.
I don't believe I'm bipolar, though I've been diagnosed with that.
Okay, so they put you on lithium.
They put me on Depakote, and then they put me on two other medications. I refuse to take any of it.
Okay, wow. We watched an episode of House last night where they tried to get him to take the medication, and he kept spitting it at them. So they didn't do anything to treat your cancer, basically. You cured that in yourself.
I believe that the universe cured me because I don't believe that it was something given to me in order for me to pass on. I believe that it was given to me so that I could heal from it and then I could therefore teach other people. And I know that a lot of people defer in their thoughts for why people get certain things, and some people, oh, it's the stress and it's this and that. I have a certain belief. I stick to that belief, and I promise you it's gotten me very far in life.
Yeah, I'm sure it has. I have a term for BS, you know what BS is, right?
Yeah.
I that's for me, that's belief system.
Right.
Yes. Because whatever you're believing is what you're attracting. So we have about 2 seconds left in our Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I told you it would go very fast. Everybody, this has been Dawn Johnson, Self-Esteem Queen, www.selfesteemqueen.com. And thank you, Dawn, for being my guest. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in this week and being as awesome as you are. And, Dawn, keep on keeping on, and we'll talk again soon. I know you're here in Los Angeles where I am, and I think that we should continue to be in touch and see what we can create together. And also, everybody, remember the last six letters of attraction are action. So do what Dawn Johnson has been doing and create the life that you were born to live. Thanks, everybody, and good night.
Good night.